Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Longevity in any career is impressive, but in the show business, or more specifically the music business, to be popular for a long time is a hard thing to do. Then there's the Rolling Stones. From their debut single, Come On, released in 1963, to today, still selling out packed stadiums, Mick, Keith, and the rest are true rock and roll legends. So here, according to Spotify, are their top 10 most streamed songs to start us off with. So at number 10 with 185 million streams is You Can't Always Get What You Want.
You can't always get what you want.
At number 9 with 227 million streams, Brown Sugar. At number 8 with 240 million streams, Wild Horses. Number 7, 300 million streams, Beast of Burden.
I'll never be your beast of burden.
And number 6, with 310 million streams, Angie.
Angie, you're beautiful.
And number 5, with 500 million streams, Start Me Up. And number 4, with also 500 million streams, Give Me Shelter. And number 3, with 510 million streams, Sympathy for the Devil. At number 2, with 622 million streams, I Can't Get No Satisfaction. No, that's not that one. It's not that one. Oh, I'm so good at this. And at number 1, as you heard, with 970 million streams, Paint It Black. And joining us for this monumental episode, somebody that we've tried to do this twice before and it's not quite happened. But please welcome back to the pod pal, just my pal, is Brandon. He's back. Yay.
I'm honored. This is amazing. It's my favorite group ever.
Man. This is the thing. We were saying just before we pressed record that I feel like the Rolling Stones is one of those legacy acts that you feel you have. It's an episode that we have to do. Yeah. You know, there are certain bands and artists that I feel that we just have to do a top 10 on. And the Rolling Stones are one of them. So you just said that they're your favorite band ever.
Yeah.
And what's the reason for that?
I can't really give you a reason other than the music. When I was, my introduction to them obviously was a couple of the stadium bangers and stuff that they'll play at sporting events. But when I was in high school and secondary, one of our teachers really liked it, Mr. Cornelius. And every day we went into class, he would have a Rolling Stones song playing. And I was kind of introduced to it through that. And he ended up being one of my favorite teachers. It's a teacher that I still have communication with today at the ripe old age of 41. And
you're just a pup.
Yeah.
You're just a pup, mate, at 41.
Well, it's been 25 years since then. But yeah, like it's just something that really resonated with me. I've seen them now 4 times.
Really?
Yeah, I the last time I saw them about I think 2 years ago in Los Angeles, I drove my partner and not his style of music at all. And I asked him if he wanted to go again in July when I'm going. He goes, "No, you're good.
Really?
Enjoy yourself." Yeah.
So it didn't convert him to being a Rolling Stones fan.
No, not at all.
Right. Okay. So what year was the first time you saw them?
November 2004, I believe, in San Francisco.
Right.
Metallica opened for him, which had a kind of an interesting Marianne Faithfull correlation there as well, because she performed on one of their songs. And yeah, like it's man, that was that was life changing that day.
I can imagine. I mean, I've never seen them live, and it, but I've always been. The thing is, I think what's not unfortunate, but I think a bit unfair. It's always Beatles or Stones. They always have that comparison of like, it's almost like you've got to like either one or the other. And I kind of, I spent years with that thought in my mind that I'm a massive Beatles fan, so I'm not going to listen. I know some of their hits, but I'm not going to listen to their Stone stuff. And then I started getting into it a little bit more. And again, the majority of my top 10 are going to be major hits.
Yeah,
but at the same time, I listened to the audiobook of the Keith Richards autobiography, Life, I think it was called.
Yeah.
And it was fascinating with the fact that he made it sound so easy how they got into the music business. You know, I was just walking down the street and someone gave me a record contract. And you think, it can't be that easy, surely. But what you don't hear is the going up and down the country in an old battered van, playing places and, you know, just crappy little bars and pubs and stuff.
He kind of just treats it as destiny. Like, it was just meant to happen to us. Like,
but don't you feel that a lot of the people that are legends, that's the story that they had. It's sort of like it was destined that it didn't matter what happened, we were going to be big stars.
It's they don't have any actual legitimate, reasonable explanation as to why it happened.
Yeah.
Outside of the music being good, but there's a lot of music that's great that doesn't reach that level.
Any of the, like, whenever I hear stories of famous people, it's always they seem to just fall into a record contract, or they were in a bar and there was someone, like the famous Oasis one is Alan McGee was at this place, he wasn't there to see Oasis. Oh, do you want a record contract? Yeah, all right. It's like,
fine.
it can't be that easy. But it's also, I was having this conversation when we did our top 10 Elton John songs with Joe Elvin, and it was that thing of like, you think of how many Elton John, there's one Elton John. But how many people out there that haven't been discovered that is better than Elton John? You would never know. You know, it's just right place, right time. I mean, the Stones were iconic, I think, is too small a word for someone like the Rolling Stones, isn't it, I think?
It's really unprecedented as far as duration. Like, it's,
yeah. Now, we've got a new feature. I did mention this again to you before we started. From lovely Lisa. So we've got Lisa's challenge. She's got her own jingle, Brandon, as well. She's got her own jingle. So bear with me.
Lisa's challenge.
What the fuck are you saying?
Now we both know and love Lisa, and that pretty much sums her up in that one little snap there. So basically, we know we're going to get duplicates, and we get duplicates in pretty much all the episodes. But the Lisa's challenge is you need to tell me how many duplicates you think we're going to have in our top 10. And then we'll see at the end who wins, because I'm going to say as well. So how many duplicates of Rolling Stones songs do you think we're going to have in our top 10?
So on my list of runner-ups, honorable mentions, I think I end up with around 35 or so.
Yeah.
That being said, I do feel like we're going to have a lot of duplicates. I think it's going to be probably, let's go with five.
Okay, you're going to say five. See, the thing is, I think you're obviously a bigger fan than me, so I don't know how many deeper cuts you're going to have. But I
went with one deep cut, and that was it.
Right. Saying that.
I'm mainstream.
I'm gonna say six then. I'm gonna go a little bit higher than you. I'm gonna say six.
Did I just give it away?
Well, I mean, thank you very much for that, because I forgot to tell you there is $500 on the line here, Brandon.
Okay.
Now I've gone and said that, it's going to be five, isn't it? I don't even know it is. Okay, so we'll keep a track of that as we go. So, Brandon, give us your number 10 then, please.
All right, so this is one of my deeper cuts. It's a song called Through and Through. I don't think it had a lot of critical acclaim in the UK. It wasn't one of their smash hits as per the usual, and it definitely didn't have any critical acclaim in the US. And I picked this for selfish reasons. My first show, as I said, in San Francisco, about halfway through the show, the whole band had left the stage, and it left Keith Richards on stage by himself. Usually when he's by himself, it's trouble. But he basically sat on stage on the stool with an acoustic guitar and a cigarette dangling out of his mouth and sang Through and Through acoustic, just raw vocals and the guitar, and it was just amazing. And I fell in love with the song at that point forevermore.
Wow. Do you know what album it comes from?
It was on Voodoo Lounge, I believe.
Oh, it was on Voodoo Lounge. Right.
94, yeah.
I was looking and I cannot find anything.
It's not in the This is Rolling Stones, the Spotify curated list. Not on that. You gotta I think you actually have to search it.
You see if
and they spell it
THRU. Through and through. There it is. Yeah. It's just I like to have a little listen to. So this is a Keith Richards song, is it?
It is. I believe he wrote it. He definitely performs it. It's just very much a kind of call and response with one person, if that makes sense. Like he's trying to sell something to himself when he's talking, kind of spoken word vocals. But yeah, just a chill kind of a vibe.
So where do you put Keith Richards in like the pantheon of like lead guitarists?
I think as far as like a skill set, and I don't play any instrument, so I can't say this firsthand, but I think in terms of a skill set, maybe not a top five, but just the distinct grimy, grungy sound that he has with the guitar. I think I would put him in the top five for that, for listenability. He just is so distinct with his guitar.
Yeah, I think it's more his riffs that he has. Yeah. It's something that is so strong when it comes to. I always love voices when, as soon as they start singing, you know who they are.
Yeah.
And you kind of get that with a Keith Richards song. As soon as a song, especially like the start of Rolling Stones songs.
Yeah.
For the quiz, I was going to do like the first 2 seconds of a Rolling Stones song, but I started putting them together and I thought, this is too easy.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you hear Satisfaction, you know it's Satisfaction. And it was weird because I thought, this is too easy. I cannot do this as a quiz because you're just going to get 10 out of 10. It's going to be ridiculous. So Voodoo. Yeah, Voodoo Lounge. So my number 10 also comes from Voodoo Lounge as well. And it's I think it was the big hit of the album. And it's Love is Strong.
Okay.
And I can remember it from the video as well, because they were like, I think, walking through the streets of New York. And they were like God's big, massive humans going through the streets. But it always reminded me that this is like, it was a great lead song for a new album. It's a real good, like strong song. And it didn't really sound like the Rolling Stones. You know what I mean?
No, it's got that twangy, kind of high-pitched guitar intro. Like, it's just a little bit funky. Yep.
A little bit funky. That actually sums it up really well. It's a little bit funky.
Sums up a lot of their songs. They had a whole period that was country, and I think he spent time in Tennessee and Nashville, and a lot of influence there.
Yeah. I must admit, because when we first originally arranged to do this, on the Tuesday, or might have been even the Wednesday before we were supposed to record, I listened to like Rolling Stones all day, and I couldn't believe the different kinds of music that were in, like starting from 63 or the early 60s going through. A lot of it is blues, isn't it? A lot of it is very rhythm and blues, like old style rhythm and blues. But like all of a sudden there'd be a great acoustic song, or this killer love song, or this amazing rock track, and it was just like it opened my eyes to the right. It made me look at them in a completely different way,
right
compared to them just being, they're like anti-Beatles, if you like. It's like they're the opposite to what the Beatles are, which they're not.
They have this reputation of being the rough around the edges Beatles, and the kind of the more rated R, rated X Beatles. Like they've got they don't have any issue with singing to controversy. But they really are so much more than that.
Mm, I completely agree. Yeah. Right, go on then. Your number 9 then, please.
My number 9 is going to be Mother's Little Helper.
Oh, okay.
And that was recorded here in Los Angeles at the RCA Studios. It was on Aftermath, I believe. And it's, yeah, for my money, it's the catchiest song out there about 60s housewives and benzodiazepines. They wrote the song about the kind of, I guess, the epidemic or endemic about the over-prescription of Valium and overdosing in the 60s, because it was just this new cure-all, fix-all pill. And yeah, it's got a little bit of I guess it's applicable in modern society as well, still to this day. But in my little notes here, this song here. So we had I had a family friend from years and years ago. He passed away a couple of years ago, but he was a young intern at RCA Records in Los Angeles when they recorded this song. So he was actually in studio on this song and another one. I don't remember what the other song was. But to be a fly on the wall just around them recording this is, would have been just amazing.
Wow. So what year was this released then?
It was 66, I believe. Yeah, it was on Aftermath in 66.
60s. It definitely sounds like a very 60s Kinks kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I must admit, I think, let me see. So in my top 10, the earliest I've got is a 68 song. The early Stones, I don't jive with as much, if I can get away with saying it like that. I'm not cool enough to say things like jive. Hey,
yeah. I just said vibe earlier, and I don't know what I'm doing. I was like, who the hell am I?
I know. You know when you say something and you realize, as soon as you say it, you think, I can't pull that off. I'm not.
Like,
I'm not
at least half the room is judging me at this point, yeah.
Yes.
This song also has one of my favorite lines of music, and it's just, what a drag it is getting old.
Amen to that, just, brother.
Yeah, like I said, that still resonates to this day. Woke up this morning with a headache and a sore knee for no reason. Like,
all I can tell you, Brandon, as you're 41 and I'm 54, it's only downhill from now. Okay, so the way you feel now is the best you're ever going to feel.
You are so uplifting.
I like to feel I'm good for morale, you know? Right. So my number 9, and this is one I definitely have to thank you for, because before listening to that, having that day of listening to the Rolling Stones songs, I'd never heard of this song. I'd never heard this song. And it's from it's only Rock and Roll album in 1974. And it's a song called Short and Curly's.
Yeah.
So you know this one. I mean, I had to, as soon as I think I had a big, massive playlist that I was listening to. And as soon as I heard it, I thought, I think I listened to it. I rewound it. Fucking hell, granddad. I replayed it, I think, 5 times on the trot. Because I thought, oh my God, this is like such a great song.
Yeah.
And then I looked and saw what it was called, Short and Curly's. I mean, that's a great title for an album.
Have to include that, yeah.
Oh my God. So I have to say, I would not have even heard this song if it hadn't have been for you and for the fact that we were going to say we're doing the Rolling Stones. So I would thoroughly recommend anybody, if you don't know, it's a great rhythm and blues song, but it's got some great lyrics in it. It's got just a really good, I'm going to say it again, it's got a really good vibe to it, Brandon, you know?
All right, we're doing this.
We're doing this. So I'm assuming you know this song.
Yeah.
I've
heard of it. It's not, wasn't on my list, and it actually didn't make my honorable mentions either, but I'm familiar with the song, and yeah, it's got that same kind of, like, you can tell he spent time in the country music region in Tennessee and in Alabama. Like, it's got that, just that sound to it.
It has. Absolutely has. Completely agree. But that's my number 9, Short and Curly's. I just like saying that. That's good. Short and Curly's. Okay, then. Your number 8 then, please, Brandon.
My number 8 is Beast of Burden.
Oh, that's my number 5.
All right.
I love that song.
That's one.
That's one. Let me find that.
And yeah, Beast of Burden was a little bit later on. It was from 77 or 78. And it's, let's see my notes here. So I was kind of reading the stories on it. And there's a lot of different stories about the backing of the song, who wrote it, what the lyrics, kind of the lyrical meaning. And the most reputable one I could find, which was partially from, the claim was partially from Keith, is that he had kind of written portions of the lyrics as a token of gratitude to Mick Jagger for shouldering the burden during his 70s blackout phase.
Right.
He basically has said publicly that Mick, although I don't think Mick was much better, he had said publicly that Mick had really kind of kept the band going through the 70s. And that was his, I think he said in retrospect, it was kind of a thank you to Mick. So I thought that was kind of cool. I didn't know that about the song. And yeah.
This to me is exactly what I think why Keith is a great guitarist is the rhythm stuff. It's not necessarily lead guitar stuff. It's just the way that the songs, I just love this song. I came very late to it because, again, being a Beatles fan, it was only the hits that I knew. But when you start getting into it and you realize, I mean, this was a hit for them, I think, wasn't it? But it wasn't like, it's not one that a lot of people would, I think, really, really know, apart from the other ones.
Yeah, it's it charted really well in the U.S., but I know the U.S. UK charts are a little different. I'm not sure how it did over there.
Yeah.
I think it got top 10 over here for a little bit. But yeah, it's not that power, kind of that power anthem, but that it sounds a little different. Yeah.
Yeah, it's such a good tune. Well, that's one. So we've got one on All Lisa's right. challenge. From the Some Girls album. Again, obviously, I'm going from the UK releases. It says 1978 for the UK. Okay. It might have been slightly different for the US, but what a tune. What a great tune.
So good.
Okay. My number eight, going for one of the classics for my number eight, and it's Honky Tonk Woman. Again, it's a rhythm and blues track, but it's I haven't looked for the stories behind the songs. You just go by the lyrics, and it's obviously Mick shagging, and he's off doing a bit of shagging.
Many are, yeah.
Which, to be honest, the majority of the songs are going to be about that. I mean, I've never thought of him as a particularly good-looking man.
No.
So it shows you just the power of rock and roll, really, isn't it? You know,
it really does. Yeah, it speaks volumes.
It's ridiculous when you think about it. But the other thing, I think I may have said this before, but the whole sex, drugs, and rock and roll thing, it obviously makes you keep your hair, is what I'm saying. It's a great way of keeping hair, because it's not often you see a really bold rock and roller, is it? They've all got amazing... I mean, look at both of them, Keith and Mick, have got amazing heads of hair. Rod Stewart, an amazing head... All right, Elton John, maybe not. But the majority...
Formerly an amazing head of hair.
Formerly amazing head of hair. You look at all of people like Metallica, and I'm sure they must have done their Guns N' Roses. And look at Slash. Now, I don't know if that's a wig or not. I mean, it might be. I don't know.
Right, at this point, yeah.
Who knows? But it seems to be a thing.
We're making accusations. I don't know.
Exactly. I mean, it's not a... I don't think it's a warning for sex, drugs, and rock and roll. If you want a lovely head of hair, have sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
I said I don't play any instruments. I am so detached from rock star.
I mean, I do a bit of singing. That's about as far as I get with the sex, drugs, and rock and roll. So I'm the same. I've got there's nothing up there. So I've always found that weird, because you look at, but again, half of it you don't know whether it's a wig, and you get, and they get home and they all of a sudden take their hair off and put it by the side of the bed. You got no idea, but I kind of like to think that, especially Mick and Keith, I mean, God knows. I mean, they've done their version of rock and roll, but God knows how many drugs and God knows how much sex those two guys have had.
I feel like Keith Richards, it's ironic that his autobiography was called Life, because I feel like he's laid the blueprint of what not to do and survive. Like, I mean, he literally fell out of a coconut tree and broke his neck. Like,
you kind of feel like it's the drugs that are holding him together. It's like rust on a car.
Yeah.
Sometimes rust is the only thing that's keeping. And many people have said that he should have died like at least five times.
Oh yeah.
And he's going to outlive us all. He's going to outlive us all. I mean, it's crazy. But okay, that was my number eight. So we're on to your number seven then, please, Brandon.
All right. My number seven is Start Me Up.
That's my number seven.
Perfect.
Oh my God, we're getting synced up now. We're getting synced up. go on then. Why is this your number seven?
So this is just another one of them. I had referenced my earliest memories of Rolling Stone songs being stadium bangers, and this is just one of them. Like any hockey game I went to as a kid, any American football game, baseball games, whenever the team was down or kickoff or whatever, whatever reason it might be, you want to get everybody rallied up, this song was it.
And this to me is like one of their perfect rock songs, with another great Keith lick, if you like. Was this in there? Yeah, this was number five on their 500 million streams on Spotify.
Yeah,
for this one, and you can see that it would be used in sports, wouldn't it? It'd be great with a montage over the top of it,
Yep.
Yeah.
I actually, one of my notes here says it's an absolute stadium and sporting event banger, or a bop, as the kids say. So apparently I was ahead of my game here.
Jesus, I never wrote that, did I? Did I write that? That's the sort of thing I would say. Oh my god.
Yeah, I also cited the, as I said before, the kind of gritty, grimy guitar riff. Just it's just so good. And it has cowbell in it, like this.
Then it's a little
subtle cowbell.
Then it's a rock and roll banger if it's got Will Ferrell's not playing the cowbell, is he?
Right.
For anyone that doesn't know that, I'll put that Saturday Night Live skit in the play the show notes, the video playlist for our Patreoners, because that is about as rock and roll as you can get, is Will Ferrell playing the cowbell.
That was one of the first times I thought, oh, my dad might be cool when I saw that skit, because my dad always talked about Blue Oyster Cult when we were little, and I was just like, well, I don't even know what that is. It's like word salad.
Yeah.
And then Will Ferrell's hitting a cowbell at SNL for one of my dad's songs, and I'm like, oh, maybe he does know something about music. Okay.
See, I always find it weird that, well, it's not weird, but it's the beauty of music that it can just cross over generations. Great music. And I don't know about you, but being older than you, I'm sure that when my dad was my age and what would it have been? So maybe it would have been things like Oasis at the time. And my dad is then going to go, what are you listening to this crap for? You know, this isn't Oasis. This isn't the Beatles, which it, you know, kind of was.
Kind of is, yeah.
And you sort of think, well, they're not going to be thinking about Oasis in 20, 30 years' time. And I wonder about that with people today. Like, in 30, 40 years' time, are people going to think about Ed Sheeran and Harry Styles that same way, thinking, oh, my God, weren't they great? I mean, they probably will, because it's generational. People are still talking about the Rolling Stones 50, 60 years on. Yeah. But that isn't it weird? Because I'm sure, I've always remember hearing that Paul McCartney, and he was saying, oh, well, but they asked him, what are you going to do when you're 40? And he said, oh, well, I won't be doing this. I'm sure I'll be doing something else. You know, and he's 80 now and he's still doing it.
Yeah.
You know, well, I mean, how old's Mick and Keith? They got to be in their 80s? No, late 70s?
70, I think 78, 79. Yeah, they're right there. I don't think they're 80 yet. I thought for a little bit they were a couple years ago, but they just look it.
when you think about it, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Because, like, again, when I was younger, 50 was old. You know, if you're 20 and you think of 50, you think, my God, that's, you might as well just shoot me. That's
I'm just never going to make it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So far away.
But exactly.
Yeah.
But then to be 80 and still going out on tour is ridiculous.
Well, they've been at it for over 50 years. 54 years, something like
it's
that.
It is crazy. Yeah. It is absolutely wild. Crazy. Okay.
I don't know about the staying power though with the kids nowadays. I was going to intervene earlier. Sorry.
Yeah, you're talking about,
will people know the music 30 years from now? And I feel like with the news cycles and with everything else today, how it's just in one ear and out the other. I feel like it's our job to keep these stories alive.
I think, I also think you're right, because I think music now is just, it's disposable.
Yeah.
You know, and I noticed that somebody, it's a YouTube channel that I listened to, a guy who was a record producer called Rick Beato, does music stuff. And he was saying about how he looks at the top 10, that's the current top 10, and said all the lyrics are shit. He said the lyrics are terrible. It's just the same thing being repeated over and over again. Now, I know I sound like a grumpy old fart you know, and it's like, well, they don't write lyrics like they used to in the old days. I mean, some people still do, but it is weird how it feels that, like, even 20, 30, even in the 90s, there were songs that you felt meant something, whereas it feels like now that's not quite so prevalent.
There's no storyteller element anymore.
No.
Like, it's just, and that's, maybe all the stories have been told.
I don't know. Yeah, but I think the odd couple maybe slip through, but the majority are. Yeah. It's just I just sound like an old fart, but it's just a beat, 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 and then the same thing repeated over and over again. And
Oh,
you've got all this to look forward to, Brandon. all this complaining to look forward to. So that was both our number sevens. So what's your number six then?
My number six is Satisfaction.
Satisfaction, right? Surprise, surprise! That isn't in my top 10.
All right.
I didn't quite make it. Satisfaction. Yeah. Although it is, of course, it's an absolute banger, isn't it? It's right from the very start.
And it's 65, so it's a little earlier on. So you did say that you didn't have anything prior to 66, so that makes sense. But I have here that it was originally released as a single before coming out on Out of Our Heads, so it may have had something to do with the tour at that point, or for whatever reason they released it. And I just, the one thing that kind of gets me about the song is Charlie Watts, just that heavy drum that's not invasive, if that makes sense. Like, you get that heavy dunk, dunk, that heavy percussion beat, but there's no, it's not in the way. And I just love that. Like, he just sets the time and just, it's just such a great song.
I feel that Charlie Watts is a lot like Ringo Starr in the fact that they, and I think there's a reason that so many drummers love them, is because they don't try and overtake a song. They do what the song needs. They don't over embellish stuff. There's no fills when it doesn't need to be a fill. Yeah. And he was same as Ringo. They were the, like, the skeleton of the song. They were the, you know, the main groove, if you like. And it's, I must admit, I was just thinking then, I've got things like Love Is Strong and Short and Curly's on my top 10. If there are Rolling Stones heads out there, they're going to be absolutely like chucking things at their device now that I haven't got satisfaction in, but I've got Short and Curly's in my top 10. They're going to, I can just see people going absolutely like crazy with anger and rage, that how can you not have satisfaction? And the thing is, as soon as the song started, I thought to myself, how can I have Love Is Strong in my top 10 and not have satisfaction?
it's your list.
You're right. But, and as much as I keep saying to our guests that, you know, no list is wrong, I feel I really fucked up on that one. Oh, well.
So change it to the top 11.
We'll do the top 11. I might just be able to, get away with that. So I'll just wait for the bad emails. I'll just wait for them to come firing through. Okay, my number six. It's one of their great ballads, and I'm going for Wild Horses from Sticky Fingers in 1971. It's my number six. It's a beautiful song.
That's my number three.
That's your number three.
I mean, I had a Sticky Fingers joke. That's my, with my memoirs in college. Yeah, whatever. No, it's an amazing song. Love this song.
It's just, this one and another one of their ballads are just some of the most beautiful songs ever written.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know. I'm not a massive Stones fan. So things like their lyrics, are their lyrics really appreciated?
I think a lot of the times, and most of their songs, they are. And as I said previously, they were very counterculture for their time as well. So a lot of their lyrics were controversial and troublesome.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of, they were looked at under a microscope, but maybe for negative reasons, I guess. But nowadays it resonates. Like, they're just outspoken and opinionated. And,
Yeah.
This is the one song. So my little notes on this was that I think this was originally, it was originally written by, I think it was this one, by Graham Parsons, and then it was recorded originally in 1970 by the Flying Burrito Brothers.
Really?
I didn't look it up. Am I getting tricked here on the internet? I don't know. But Flying Burrito Brothers in 1970s, as the Stones, they passed on it. They didn't think it had a lot of weight. And then they recorded theirs the next year, I believe.
Wow.
And it went on Sticky Fingers, yeah.
That's what I mean about being in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
If the wind had changed direction slightly, we'd have been doing the top 10 Flying Burritos Brothers songs tonight, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
How mad is that? That it's just those kind of decisions.
It's wild. I'm curious to see what it sounds like, though. Like, I want to know how it was done differently, because it's a very, I feel like this is the only way it could be done. Like, slow and somber and,
Is there even, so did the Flying Burritos Brothers even do a version of it, or?
I don't know if it's even released.
Oh my God, no, there is. Yeah.
Oh,
I'm going to, let's play a little bit, because I need to hear what the Flying Burrito Brothers are like.
Oh, so, similar.
So this is Wild Horses. Now, I sound like a right DJ. This is Wild Horses now by the Flying Burrito Brothers. I never thought I'd say those words all in one.
Right.
I mean, it's the same kind of thing.
Yeah, I would say that their band name is non-descriptive, is not accurate. I don't know what I expected, but I expected something not like the Stones.
No. I mean, it's pretty much sort of almost like it's the same backing track, but just with a different voice almost.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting. Okay. On the video playlist, I'll see if I can find some footage of the Flying Burrito Brothers, and I'll pop that on the... It's three words I never thought I was going to be saying today's podcast is Flying Burrito and Brothers.
If it weren't for them, that word sequence may not have ever been said before.
Exactly. So. There you go. See, Brandon, there's so many things I have to thank you for. That's crazy.
Real quick. This was, I guess all the rumors at the time were that Mick had recorded this song because of Marianne Faithfull. Like, it was written to her.
Right.
But he denied it, but he says, yeah, in hindsight, it kind of makes sense that people would think that. And he goes, it really does resonate with him that she was that wild horse.
Right.
Thought that was kind of cool.
That's very good. Well, that's another thing that I've learned today. So that's great. We will delve into the Flying Burrito Brothers a little bit more for that one. Okay. So we're up to three on Lisa's challenge now. Wild Horses, Satisfaction. Oh, no, sorry, Wild Horses, Start Me Up, and Beast of Burden. So,
correct, yeah.
With a possible 1, 2, 3, 4 more to go. So, okay, but first of all, it's...
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Time for this.
Pop quiz, hot shot.
Okay. So I've gone for the more conventional questions and answers for this one. So I've got 10 questions for you, Brandon, all about the Rolling Stones. And here we go. See how many you can get. Number one. Released in February 1964, what was the title of the Rolling Stones' debut album?
Oh. God, I forget people yelling at me for this. I have no idea. No answer. Pass.
No.
I'm not even drawing a blank. I just can't even think.
Now, I was looking, it says, not Fade Away, stroke Little by Little. Does that sound right to you?
I've heard Fade Away, but not, no.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm putting that one down as...
It's Fade Away, stroke Little by Little, like, it's
yeah.
Name. Maybe...
Yeah, so I don't know whether one was the UK version and one was the American version.
Okay, maybe that's what it was, yeah. Possibly. Or I just don't know what I'm talking about. That's more likely.
I doubt that.
Who am I kidding?
Number two, what was the Stones' first number one single in America?
Oh, it was... It was number one for 2 weeks. Was it Paint It Black? No,
it was Angie.
Oh, okay.
It was Angie. Number three, what is the name of the Hindu goddess who inspired the band's logo?
You're getting ready to hit the button, right? Well, now I'm like thinking gender, like goddess. I'm like, was Shiva? Shiva was the goddess, right?
Is that your answer?
Is it wrong?
Yes, it is.
I'm going to get none. Lisa thought she was going to get none last week. I'm going to get none this week.
It's Kali, apparently.
Okay.
So I'm assuming Kali has just got big lips. I mean,
just giant tongue and
giant tongue and big. Oh yeah, because it's a yeah. Right. Okay, number four. On the 18th of February 2006, the Rolling Stones performed to their largest crowd of 1.5 million people during a free concert. Where did the gig take place?
That was 1 million. That wasn't. The Altamont was in like the 80s, right?
Altamont was, I think, in the
Altamont
60s.
Free? There's 60s, 70s or 60s?
Yeah,
60s okay.
or 70s, but it's not that. So this was February 2006.
Oh, my God. I quit.
Think of somewhere exotic.
Know.
Think of somewhere exotic. Think of Barry Manilow.
I'm not a fan of Lou.
Okay, you're not a fan of Lou. Okay.
I will say, it wasn't Cuba, was it?
No,
that wasn't part of the Ole Ole Ole.
No.
Okay,
it was Copacabana Beach, Rio
de
Janeiro.
Oh, that was part of the Ole, the Latin American tour, though.
There you go. Okay, number five. During a bust on one of the Stones' acid fuel parties in 1967, what did the group mistaken 18 policemen for?
What did they mistake?
Yes.
18 police. I don't know, groupies.
No, it was a gang of identical blue dwarfs.
Maybe I didn't hear the question. You said it was a dust up, but did you reference drugs at all?
Well, it was just during a bust. Acid fueled party. Yeah.
Oh, you did say acid
fueled. I did say that. I mean, to be fair, I butchered the question. I said it in one of the worst questions I've ever asked. But anyway, number six. How many number one hits have the Rolling Stones had on the Billboard Hot 100?
Six.
It's eight. Which Rolling Stones track did Paul McCartney and John Lennon sing backing vocals on?
I have no idea. Pavel, I'm going to get zero.
There's nothing wrong with that. It's actually We Love You. That was the name of the song. Number eight. Which legendary artist created the album cover for Sticky Fingers? Come on,
Andy Warhol.
Yes, well done.
Damn it, there goes zero.
As Annie Potts said, we got one. At number nine, what year were the Rolling Stones inducted to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
2006? 2002.
No, 1989.
Oh, I saw something about a performance that was done in 2006. Okay, well.
Okay. And the final one, which director has used the song Gimme Shelter in four of his films?
Martin Scorsese.
Well done. You redeemed yourself in the last
couple
of questions.
If we ask another 40 questions, I might be able to get 10.
But that's not bad. You got two. Like, you didn't get the big fat zero, so you're okay. All right.
I will, if I'm going to make excuses, I'll say it's because I wasn't alive at the time. All of my research is past, like looking back. So, yeah.
I completely agree. That's a great excuse. Well done.
Covered my bases.
Indeed. Okay, back to the job in hand. So what's your number five then, please, Brandon?
My number five is Sympathy for the Devil.
That's my number three. Has to be in there.
Such a good one. This is one of the songs that really got controversy, or was really controversial with the lyrics. He literally cites that he was there and washed Jesus's feet before they crucified him, and the slaughtering of the Romanov family and the Russian Revolution. Like, he cites all these world events, and he basically says, "And you and I were both there," to the listener as well. And it's just a great song.
There's a great footage. I love watching footage of, like, behind a camera when they're filming something, because you don't see that, you know, you don't see it in its rawest form. And on YouTube, there is footage of them while they're writing this song. And just trying to work it out, and it sounds nothing like the original, like the finished article.
Right,
and it's that thing. Same with the Get Back documentary. Have you seen that, the Beatles one?
Yes.
The fact that when it starts as like this just germ of an idea, and then it becomes this thing that everybody knows. You know, it's ingrained in everyone's DNA.
Yep.
It's amazing when you get from that point, and I'll put it again. I'll put it on the video playlist for our top heads, but. Watching them sort of just like strumming on a guitar, and you think, right, so how did it go from that to this? And then it also shows, I've tried to sing along to the woo woo bits, and there was no digitally taking one woohoo and then copy and pasting it. They have to stand there physically, and I get out of breath because I think, how do they do that? So many, there must have, well, it, there's footage of that as well.
At the concerts, the woof woo goes on for about 4 minutes.
Yeah.
sometimes longer, and people, you're surrounded by all these people who with music of their generation and their era, and they're still going at it, man.
It's such a clever,
woo woo is amazing.
It's such a clever little bit, because like you say, once it starts, It's not like it stops for a little bit of the song or whatever. It just carries on all the way
through. There's no breathing. No.
Exactly. Yeah. So you have to remember that, like, in what year did that come out? That was 68.
Yeah.
That there are three or four people in a studio doing that for like 4 or 5 minutes, you know, with no break. They're just doing it. It's just so good.
And at the live shows where it does go on for 4 minutes, you know, somebody's got to have a microphone. Somebody's got to be doing it on stage. And it's Mick running from corner to the stage to corner back and forth, just doing it. Just the cardio is amazing.
It's so good. Such a good
I'm getting
song.
Winded sitting in a chair being lazy. He's running around stage.
We're just talking about the song and we're getting winded. Okay, so that was your number five. My number five was Beast of Burden from 1978. So we're back to you for your number four then, please, Brandon.
Yes. My number four is You Can't Always Get What You Want.
Oh, yeah. This was close on my list, but it didn't quite make it for me.
So this was the song has, I mean, anytime a song has like choir involved in it, I'm all about it.
Right.
They used the London Bot Choir backing for the intro, and apparently they kind of did it as a joke. First of all, Keith Richards just thought, "Oh, that'll be funny," and it ended up being one of the most memorable little 1 minute clips of audio. Like it's you hear this and you know what song it is.
Yeah.
And shockingly, this only got as high as number 42 in the U.S.
Oh, really?
Kind of surprised. There were several of them. Like "Sympathy for the Devil," the last one, only got as high as 97. On the Hot Billboard 100, which is wild to me. Like songs are generational and it, yeah. The other funny bit on this song is that it was, my note here says, the song was used by that malfeasant asshat, or shall I say cockwomble, I wanted to use cockwomble, Donald Trump for his rallies.
Right.
And then Rolling Stones went and sued him and he said, I have licensing, and they sued him again. And finally he backed off and now he plays YMCA by the Village People. So
of course he does. Of course
always
he does.
A choice.
That is a choice. Yeah. Because the one thing about this song is, I think there's a George Michael song called "Waiting for That Day," and that was on. Okay. I think it was on "Listen Without Prejudice," Volume okay. 1. And it's weird because it's the same chords, but there's only two chords in the song. But he does start singing "You Can't Always Get What You Want." As the song sort of is winding up, and I think that then gave Keith and Mick a writing credit on the song.
Yeah,
kind of the same as what they did with Bittersweet Symphony, wasn't it? I think.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Was that I can't remember what song that was for, but that was they definitely ended up.
I don't remember the name of it either, but that's what it was. It was the same underlying guitar riff, I think.
Yeah. It's a great. Great tune. It just didn't quite make it into my top 10. So what year was this?
68. From Let It Bleed. Yeah.
Yeah. Great tune. Great tune. Okay. My number four is a song. Now, I don't know with the whole PC thing now. I'm not sure whether something like Brown Sugar is allowed to be. Do they play Brown Sugar live now, or is it something that is frowned upon?
I think they did. Like last time I saw them. Yeah, I think they did.
Right. I mean,
because I've kind of wondered the same thing. Like it's not a negative, it's not detriment. It's not sung in a demeaning manner or anything like that. It's just. He's just singing about his attraction. He's singing about what he likes.
And... You know that some people would take offense to it. That's the trouble, isn't it?
Oh, for sure, yeah.
But I also feel that like Mick and Keith would just tell him to go forth and multiply, you know? They wouldn't really... They've been singing it for, 1971? So they've been singing it for 50 years.
Yeah.
They really aren't going to worry if somebody's, you know...
Like, do you have a problem with it now?
Exactly. It's like 52, 53 years old, and now you're going to start moaning about it. But... And like you say, it's not like it's anything. They're not being condescending or horrible. They're saying about how much they love it, you know.
Yeah.
But again, it's different times is the thing I think they say, isn't it, Brandon?
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. The kids.
So that made it into that's my number four. Okay, so your number three was Wild Horses.
Correct. Yeah.
My number three is Sympathy for the Devil. So what's your number two?
Number two is Painted Black.
Ooh, wow. Okay. So that means, okay, all right, okay, that's interesting. Okay. This didn't make my top 10 because I haven't got the earlier one. So what year is this from?
Painted Black is, it's on Aftermath, sorry. So it was released as a single in 66 and then on Aftermath the next year. But yeah, it's just, I'm kind of a sucker for anything with kind of an Eastern musical influence. And it's got the sitar and the castanets. My favorite Beatles song is Within Without You. I love George Harrison. So I've got that, like, yeah, anything with kind of exotic instrumentation is just amazing. And this song is great. And it's a song, it's kind of about despair and desolation and loss. And it's not an uplifting song at all, but it's just so catchy and so, yeah. It's a toe tapper.
It is, but I don't know, because it always reminds me of the Vietnam War. And I think I've had this conversation on a previous episode that I'm sure whether it was Forrest Gump or some Vietnam movie had it as on their soundtrack.
Right. It's been in so many war movies.
Yeah.
Many movies in general.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But it's, I think it was when we did songs about colors, with colors in the title. I think somebody chose that. And I thought, I don't know whether or not it was something that was linked to the Vietnam War, but it's just like you say, movies have used it and it just becomes something that's imprinted on your brain and stuff. But I know that's a very, very popular one. Wasn't that the one that was number one?
It was number one for a couple weeks, yeah.
But it was 970 million streams on Spotify for Painted Black.
It's so wild.
Absolutely wild, yeah. Okay, my number two. So that means that either my number one or number two isn't in your top 10, which is very interesting because my number two, I'm going with the other amazing ballad that the Rolling Stones have done, and that's Angie. You're absolutely one of my favorite songs of all time. Just beautiful acoustic guitar. Yeah. I tried to learn this once because you've got to tune your guitar into drop D or something. But it's like, it's just one of those things that how did he write it? You know, how did they write this song? And it's just beautiful from start to finish. So for me, it's just one of the greatest songs ever written.
I think that ended up as, let me look at my list here on my phone real quick. I think that ended up in my number 12.
Right. Okay.
So it was right on the outskirts. And I think because I had Wild Horses on there, I feel like I left Angie out. Angie was number 12, yeah.
Yeah.
It's such a good song. And his voice is so fragile in the song. Like, it's such a different kind of pitch for him.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost a little nasally. Like, I don't know. There's just a sound to it that kind of gives you the chills.
Well, he hasn't got that sort of rock or blues, like, gruff to it. It's a lot more delicate, like you say. And like, which I think works for the song as well. It's almost childlike. It's almost because he's got quite a high register, hasn't he, Mick Jagger? Yeah. It's almost sort of childlike, but Goat's Head Soup, 1973 was the album, but so good. Okay, now just to let you know, if we've got the same number one, then that means you'll win Lisa's challenge because that means we'll have five correct.
So the
pressure's on.
No pressure.
But before we find out what our number ones are, give us a countdown from 10 to 2 and then I'll do the same.
All right, my number 10 was Through and Through with Keith Richards on the vocals. Number 9 was Mother's Little Helper. 8 was Beast of Burden. 7 was Start Me Up. 6 is Satisfaction. 5, Sympathy for the Devil. 4, You Can't Always Get What You Want. 3, Wild Horses. And 2, Painted Black.
Wonderful. Mine is number 10, Love is Strong. 9, Short and Curly's. Number 8, Honky Tonk Woman. 7, Start Me Up. 6, Wild Horses. 5, Beast of Burden. 4, Brown Sugar. 3, Sympathy for the Devil. And number 2, Angie. So, Brandon, to win Lisa's challenge, what is your number one Rolling Stone song? It's got to be the same one that I've got. It has to be.
I feel like it has to be. I prefaced this a little bit when I did the top of the previous podcast about One Hit Wonders. And I said that my winner for the One Hit Wonder was the only song that I've listened to even remotely as close to this song. And my number one, this song is Gimme Shelter.
Well done, Brandon. You have won Lisa's challenge by getting 5 right.
Beautiful.
That is my number one too. That is absolutely the greatest Rolling Stone song ever, I think.
I, I, this is another one that I was shocked. Like, the highest it got on the U.S. Billboard charts was 61.
That's crazy.
So just make, yeah, I always used to think that U.S. music is kind of the staple, the standard, the bellwether. But no, I'm like, no, it's rubbish. It's rubbish.
Yeah.
We don't know what we're talking about.
I think I might have mentioned again on a previous episode, I feel like every, like, legacy artist or band has got one... like a Bohemian Rhapsody kind of song, and one Eric Clapton's got Layla, Queen has got Bohemian Rhapsody. This, I feel, is the Rolling Stones' epic. Yeah.
It's their song. Their magnum opus. Their prized paramount work. Yeah.
It's like if you could take just one song from that particular person, this one is their GOAT. Is their greatest song.
And it absolutely. It absolutely resonates. Like, it's just the whole song is about kind of being on the edge of apocalypse and kind of on the, like, we're teetering on destruction, and it just has never been more true. This was written around the time of the Vietnam conflict, and it was kind of that had that mentality to it. And then the backstory with Mary Clayton on the vocals, who's just absolutely amazing, and recording at, you know, 1 a.m. and then having a miscarriage, I guess, the next day, like, just. The story is incredible. It's sad, but there's a bunch of different documentaries out there, but one of them that I watched, she was there. I think it was called, like, 10 Feet from Stardom or 20 Feet from Stardom.
I've
or something.
That. Where it's called the backing vocal. It's so good.
Her part is just incredible. Like, it puts tears in your eyes, but the entire time she's smiling, she's just like, it happened, it's life, but look what, you know, I was doing my thing. Like,
when she's singing that, the rape murder lines, and her voice cracks at that moment, and you can hear, I think it's Mick Jagger in the background going woo!
Like,
every time I hear that, it makes their hairs. We're trying to work it out when we're gonna do a live show where it's the top 10 greatest moments in music.
Oh,
that,
nice.
that couple of seconds for me would be in my top 10 because it is every time. You hear it. It just, it's like one of those moments where you wish you could have stood in the studio at that point when she was doing that, you know, respective of all this, the shit she was going through and she was going to go through. What a moment in rock history that.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. And so I've definitely listened to this song more than any other song ever. And it's not, like I said, it's not even close, with the exception of that one other song. I won't do, you know, spoiler alert on that podcast. It's just an incredible song. There was her little voice crack right there.
That was it right there.
It's just such an amazing song. And it's the intro, the prelude or the guitar riff leading into it is my alarm on my phone to wake up in the morning.
Really?
And usually you do that to songs you don't like because it wakes you up. Maybe this is why my partner refuses to go back to the Stones concert with me. Every morning at 6 o'clock in the morning, that Gimme Shelter starts playing, and it's been like that for about 9 years now. So yeah, right. I would hate me too, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, now that I'm verbalizing it.
What you want to do, you want to get that moment when a voice cracks, that'll wake you up in the morning, won't it? Absolutely, that would. Can you imagine?
Just isolate that.
Oh my God. So congratulations, you won Lisa's challenge on this episode. You got the five. So the five that we got were Beast of Burden, Start Me Up, Sympathy for the Devil, Wild Horses, and Gimme Shelter. So well done, Brandon, for that. Well done. Okay.
15 unique songs. Right? 15 unique songs. Yeah.
15, so we had 15 unique songs. So that's a hell of a playlist. And it's going to be, I'll tell you what, it's worth joining the Patreon just to come and see the playlist for the video playlist for this. Absolutely. Okay. So we've got some honorable mentions. Alma Rodriguez said Beast of Burden for me, An Emotional Rescue is my number two. Lindsay Pannanen.
Yeah, that's great.
Said Wild Horses, I Walked Down the Aisle to a Piano version of it.
Oh, I love her.
Yeah. Nikki Dennis, She's a Rainbow, which is another great great track. Anna Cochran, Where to Start? So here we go. Wild Horses. When I lost my dad in 2005, this song played constantly in my head. To this day, it stops me in my tracks. Sympathy for the Devil, just a great tune. Angie, I Hate That Sadness in Your Eyes, gets me in my feels.
Yeah.
Brown Sugar and Jumpin' Jack Flash. We never even mentioned Jumpin' Jack Flash. Look, a great two, but my all-time would be Miss You. She also says, and the Stones over the Beatles every day. There you go, Anna. Corey Ogilvie said, Anna Cochran, no, Paint It Black, because you never mentioned Paint It Black. Dan the Man Harper, She's a Rainbow. Erin Peterson, Sympathy for the Devil. And Maria Pereira, also Sympathy for the Devil. She says Paint It Black, but also Sympathy for the Devil. And I Can't Get No Satisfaction. And their cover of Route 66. But I'll love almost every cover of that song because it reminds me of home. An honourable mention. Honourable mention for the time Keith Richards took out a fan with a guitar when they stormed the stage during Satisfaction and then put it back on and kept playing. Yeah. I'll put that in the video playlist as well because yes. That is legendary.
I forgot about that.
Did you? Oh, it's just the way that he doesn't even think. Because I think there's a little balloons falling down or something and he sees someone and he just sort of swings it around and smacks this guy and then sort of swings it back and just puts it back on and just starts playing again.
Consummate professional.
Ultimate. Mary Jane Sims said Paint It Black will always be my favourite. Seen the Stones live a few times now and the best song live is Gimme Shelter. Yes. Paige Enk Lefevre, what a name. What a name. My favourite band, my faves are Jigsaw Puzzle, Stray Cat Blues, Wild Horses, Paint It Black, Mother's Little Helper 2. Many to list. So there you go. Well, Brandon, we got it done.
We did it.
Not only did we get it done, but you won Lisa's challenge as well. So, and you are the first winner of Lisa's challenge. So congratulations.
Cemented in history.
Cemented
the list
in
might
history.
Have been crap, but I won Lisa's challenge.
Indeed. Your face will be up on the Mount Rushmore of Lisa's challenge now. So there you go. Before we say our goodbyes, let me just tell everybody if they want to get in touch or anything like that, all the information is in the show notes. If you want to come and join our Patreon, come and be a top head just like Brandon. God bless him. And many like him. I was going to say many like him. It always helps us out. The support is amazing and it literally keeps our lights on. And all the other information to get and listen and join in with the fun, it's all there in the show notes. So just look at that. Brandon, you're an absolute star. Thank you so much for joining
us
again.
Thank you so much for having me.
And I'm glad we finally got it done.
Only took about 3.5 weeks, right?
It's fine. It doesn't matter. And to everybody else, thank you very much for watching and listening. Now let's go start the countdown.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.